Well, the obvious trope is to name it after our last names, you know, mm-hmm. Clooney Robinson, Robinson Clooney, something like that, mm-hmm. which Lisa later pointed out, by the way, that we would be, those were both married and have taken her husband's names. So they actually would have been named after, they wouldn't even.
Those dicks are not getting this company.
No, no way, no way.
Hello, and welcome to Overshare, a podcast where we have honest conversations with creative people we admire about the struggles that often come along with being a creative professional. In a world of carefully curated portfolio sites and Instagram feeds, we try to get past those highlights and discuss the tough stuff we don't talk about in public often enough. In this episode, you will learn that happiness and ambition can coexist, and how meeting a stranger who shares your passions can unlock whole new chapters in your career. I'm your host, Justin Genak, and I'm also the co-founder of Working Not Working, a curated community that connects companies with the universe's most respected, most awarded, and hardest working creatives in advertising, design, production, and tech. Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, I've been a huge fan of Squarespace for a long time, so much so that I was in their first ad campaign ever. You can Google it if you want to see me picking up garbage. The team at Squarespace is growing a ton right now, especially in their creative and marketing departments. They're looking for product designers, web designers, UX writers, a creative writer, project manager lead, and more. So head to squarespace.com/careers to check out all of their open roles. I have a lot of friends over there on their creative and marketing teams, and it's a great crew and a stupidly nice office. So check them out on Working Not Working or at squarespace.com/careers for all of their open opportunities. Now, before we start, I want to ask you a favor. If you've listened to Overshare and enjoyed it, please take a minute to rate and review us either now or at the end of the episode. It'll earn you some good karma, and it also goes a long way in helping other people discover the podcast. Also, if you want to get new episodes and they're released every 2 weeks, just hit that subscribe button. Now, today's episode is with Jamie Robinson and Lisa Clooney, founders of creative agency Joan, a company inspired by the trailblazing Take No Shit Jones throughout history. And it's definitely a fitting moniker for these two. I have so much admiration for their incredible partnership, deep friendship, and obvious overflowing love that Lisa and Jamie have for each other and for the work that they do. Now, hanging out with these two for an hour is a blast. I just re-listened to the episode and it made me so happy. We had so much fun. I can't even explain how much fun we had. There were songs sung, honest insights on the challenges of starting a business, and probably a few too many references to Howard Hughes bottling his pee. Also, Jamie spilled the name of her children's book she's always wanted to write, and I'm keeping it in the episode, so now she has to make it. Nothing like podcast peer pressure to hold you accountable, Jamie, so we look forward to seeing it. Please enjoy my chat with Lisa Clooney and Jamie Robinson from Joan. I think you'll find their joy, enthusiasm, and optimism contagious.
Well, I'll do it. Help you.
It's funny, when I was doing these as live events, my partner Adam says, it's overshare, not overswear. Oh. And I'm like, why? He's like, well, you just swear a lot. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to swear. I'm like, I'm still going to swear, but just not as much. But I lead with, what's your favorite curse word? So we're going to.
All right, here we go.
So parents, when they're listening, they really know what they're getting into right at the start.
Right.
Well, that's good. Exactly. If you have babies at home, turn this down.
Yeah.
Put this on your headphones.
Don't let Jimmy hear this.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he knows them all. Please.
Yeah.
True. He sees Jamie's texts, which are like.
Does he really?
Of course, it goes to his iPad.
You got to turn that off.
Oh my God, do I need to be careful? Like, legit.
Okay.
It goes to his iPad.
Because she.
You're just telling her this now?
I never. Oh my God. Okay, we want that. We won't have that. Okay. That's later.
That's amazing that your texts go to her son's.
Well, because I say really inappropriate stuff to each other. We're like, all right, it's just us. It's like our. Inappropriate.
Yeah. And the gifts, you know?
Friendship.
The gifts.
The gifts are the best. Well, we're going to start.
Let's start.
This is great. Thank you both for being here.
Having us.
How are you?
Meh. Amazing.
We all just got off planes last night. Super tired. Well, first, I got to identify everybody. For those listening, this is Justin.
This is Jamie Robinson.
And this is Lisa Clooney.
All right, cool. We do feel very NPR right now. Yeah. We're in a very nice studio here, and it feels very professional.
Fancy.
And we're all very professional people, so this is going to be great.
There you go.
So we're going to start off with the easy ones. What's your favorite curse word?
Very professional question, by the way.
Yes.
Super professional. Do you want me to go?
Oh, yeah.
I actually think that... Okay, so I think for me, most of the curse words are not curse words. They're actually just words.
Uh-huh.
So, because I use them just as regular old words.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I should say this one. I can't say it because people are offended by this one, but it's the see you next Tuesday one because it is like, I don't use it.
It's like the atomic bomb.
It is. I don't really use it, but I do like it.
Unless you're British, then it's and. It's
big. Yeah, it's that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Mine is motherfuck.
You don't put the er.
I don't put the er. No, I don't know why.
That's a nice alternate. Yeah. I don't think anybody in the history of this podcast has ever said motherfuck.
Well,
there it is.
Starting now.
You're getting a t-shirt. You're going to get it. I'm going to get you an embroidered dishcloth. An embroidered dishcloth that says motherfuck.
There you go.
just for the holidays.
Yeah, exactly. We put that out when my mother comes into town.
Perfect.
Sorry, Louise.
Sorry.
Who's your favorite Joan?
Oh, wait. You mean what, our employees?
Famous Joan.
Famous Joan.
Because that would be fucked up.
Well, we're going to have you name your favorite employees later.
I love Joan Jett. I don't know.
You just met her.
Yeah, yeah. So we did Advertising Week last year, and we did a panel, me and her. And it was kind of amazing because, like, Joan Jett has been, you know, an idol forever.
Yeah.
And she wanted to come in and meet us first at the office because she was like, hey, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
So she just came in and she like hung out for like 3 hours and we just talked about like life and creative process and being a woman. And you're like, oh my God, are we friends with Joan Jett now? Like, and she was so cool because she came and she signed she brought albums and she signed them. And like,
oh my God.
She was the nicest human being, you know, I mean, she was like so cool. Down to earth, like wise. Awesome.
Amazing. That's cool.
Yeah.
So you got to go with Joan Jett then. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mine's Rivers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, well, first of all, I didn't know that much about Joan Rivers until I watched the documentary.
So good.
You know, that giant card catalog case that she has with all of her jokes filed and everything. And, like, this woman is was the hardest working yeah. woman, you know, that I can think of. And that story of just endurance and sticking with it is really cool. I mean, I just think she's amazing.
She was on a flight of mine to Vegas.
Yeah.
And she got up at the front of the flight and just said hello to everybody.
Oh, my God. I love
and it.
And
it was like, you know, like 30 seconds of Joan Rivers just like introducing herself to the plane.
I love it.
Wishing everyone a great flight.
Amazing.
And it was just like, what a great character.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome person.
For sure.
Joans are decent human beings. Joans are really decent human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I want to just get into, maybe we'll go back a little bit. Just get a little background on you guys. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Jersey.
As if anyone didn't know. Wait till she asked for some coffee.
Yeah, I'm from Jersey. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not, you know.
Which exit?
Exotic New Jersey. Uh-huh. I'm imported to New York.
I'm from Peoria, Illinois. Believe it or not. And actually, there's a lot of advertising people from Peoria, Illinois.
Really?
Yeah, Matt McDonald, who's... ECD of at BBDO. He and I were on like speech team together. Hilariously.
Lisa was a debate champion. Yeah. She was a debate champion, and she uses it every day.
Oh,
she
God.
Uses that experience every day.
So funny.
It's gotta help you out.
Yeah, I think so. I actually think public speaking, learning how to do public speaking, you know, at an early age is one of the best skills you can have.
I feel like that's like learning a foreign language at an early age, too.
Yeah.
Just once you get that in you, then it's easy after that.
Yeah, yeah.
And if not, it's all impossible.
Yeah, that's true.
You can actually get away with a lot if you can speak publicly.
Yeah.
You know, even like I was thinking about how I wasn't like, you know, I actually did pretty good if they look at the report cards in high school and I guess college. But I think a lot of it was just faking it and like using a little creativity to mask that I hadn't actually read the books.
Oh yeah.
So I would
barely read the books. I'm just like, I don't have time for this. I'm going to art class.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you just be really, really clever.
Yeah.
With your bullshitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you'd write a rap that like you're like about the American Revolution, but it'd be just the stuff that you know, like top level you learned in fourth grade. You're like, but it's a rap. So I get an A+, right? I'm like, yes.
You're so creative. Yeah. That's great. What did you guys did you grow up in creative households?
I think my family is all pretty creative, but I wouldn't think that, you know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom who actually was very, very, is a very creative person. And my dad managed stockbrokers, but on the weekends had a microphone and amplifier in the basement and a guitar. And he used to put on shows for the wall, I guess. Nobody, because we weren't even down there listening to him. So he did play music. Yeah,
he was just jamming out.
He just would jam, but I'm like, why do you need an amp, Dad? And he was like, but about the same time he grew a mustache. It was like his kind of midlife thing.
Yeah. I love that. I want a picture.
Okay, I can
get
one.
Pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good. My dad was a stockbroker, and my mom was a teacher. And she taught early childhood education. So a lot of what she did for us was just, you know, she didn't want us to watch a lot of TV and stuff. So there was always like art supplies around and kind of good, healthy fun, I would say.
Yeah, because she understood the importance of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And how did you guys find your way into the creative industry, the advertising industry?
Oh, my God. Mine is such a crazy story. I was a waitress
at a cocktail bar. That much is true.
At the Pasta House at the Galleria in St. Louis. And my roommate at the time was a receptionist at a local ad agency, and she got a higher paying job at Eddie Bauer Home Store. And so she was like, I know you want to quit waitressing. Do you want to switch job? Like, do you want to take a job? And that is how I got into advertising. I was answering phones as a receptionist at a St. Louis ad agency.
Wow.
I was also a receptionist at Mad Dogs and Englishmen. But I kind of wanted to do it for a long time. I didn't know how to get into it, but I saw Baby Boom with Diane Keaton when I was a kid, and it was like she was the Tiger Lady, and she was like, she was coming in, she was solving problems, she wore shoulder pads, and she had heels, and she stomped around, and everybody, you know, and it was one of those, in advertising, basically, in movies, rather, every advertising person is kind of a hybrid between all of the roles. They kind of, somehow, they manage to do with them all, and there's like one, it's like they're an account person. And
we only have an hour and a half, so we got to consolidate everything. There you go. You're the agency.
So I did that. But what I didn't know was I was in college and I knew I wanted to be in advertising, but I didn't know if I wanted to be on the account side. I didn't even know there was I didn't even know what strategy was or creative. And so I came in for an internship, which I got through winning this kind of competition. And I walked into Mad Dogs and it was crazy. And they were like, what do you want to be? And I'm like, I don't even know the different roles.
Yeah.
So I did a copy test for them and they were like, okay, you should be in the creative department. So I was an intern and it was really lucky.
That's cool. And then you bounced around from different shops and found your way to where? EVB.
I was at EVB.
I think we just missed each other because I had worked on the Elf Yourself.
Oh, my God. That was the most famous thing that EVB had been a part of.
Yeah, we did that with them. I think that was like 2006. Yeah. So it was like, I checked your LinkedIn. I think it's right before you started. And then where else where'd your career take you before?
Yeah. And I should mention that, so I started at Mad Dogs and then I went to Shiat in San Francisco and I worked for Chuck McBride in Shiat in San Francisco for 2 years. And then my partner and I were like, oh, this is really interesting. Digital is happening. What is this digital thing? And so and AVB had just done this Elf Yourself thing. So, and it was like this hugely famous thing. And I'm like, this is really interesting with Toy. Yeah. We went over there to do it. And it was great because it was one of those ones where we got promoted to associate creative director from copywriter and art director, but we were also going into a completely different kind of area. So it was a very lucky strike to like learn on the job and do that.
Yeah.
And I stayed there for about 2 years or so and did some incredible work that I was really proud of. That was really fun with them. And I really fell in love with the idea of interacting with the audience and creating stuff that people can play along with and somehow contribute to. And then I had heard that this company called Pereira and O'Dell was opening and didn't really know anything about them, but met PJ and Andrew and fell in incredible love with them right away and just felt they were going to be huge. And so I went to Pereira and O'Dell and I stayed there for like a long time, like 6 or 7 years.
In San Francisco?
And then came back. They felt the allure of the East Coast calling and came back and came to Wyden. And then met this beautiful princess and we started Joan. The light of my life.
I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of musical renditions going on during this conversation.
We just might. We do have a theme song for everything we work on.
Do you really?
We do. Even if it's just me and her singing the theme song.
The most recent one was after the thong song.
Yeah. That's a classic.
Yeah, it was.
By Sir Cisco.
I think he's been knighted.
I actually tweeted to Cisco a couple of years ago. I was just like, I wonder what Cisco's doing right now. And then I didn't hear back, so I guess he was doing nothing.
I guess or not. Very busy. Certainly not checking Twitter.
No, not. But you spent years in account management.
I did.
But you're a creative soul. You had a fashion brand.
Yeah,
you make stuff.
When I was about 27, left account management and went to art school at Parsons.
I remember that.
Oh, yeah. And that was actually right before I came to Fallon. I think I've constantly struggled with the boxes that you kind of get put in as agency people.
Yeah.
It's as if you lose all the other parts of yourself when you come in, you know? And one thing that I love about having our own business is that we can blur those lines. Like, Jamie's one of the most strategic people I've ever worked with, and it doesn't make her less creative.
Yeah.
And those things don't come at a zero-sum, you know, thing.
Well, it used to be such a badge of honor.
Where yeah.
Like, no, I don't do that.
I don't do any of that stuff.
I'm not responsible or think about things.
Yeah.
I just come up with the crazy ideas.
Yeah. And Lisa, I'll just say, is insanely creative.
Yes.
And it's something that I get to experience and enjoy every day. And it's amazing. It's great. And I think one of the things that we think about a lot is the traditional agency structure, as Lisa was just kind of alluding to. It actually also departmentalizes who is allowed to be creative sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a shame because you're losing out a lot of good ideas because you feel like you need to protect the definition of who is creative. But everybody has to be creative at our company. It has to be.
Well, it seems like that's maybe traditionally very ego-driven and very maybe insecurity-driven because my background's art director and creative director. And you'd be like, no, we're the ones with the ideas. You know, and it's like, well, no, that's bullshit. Get over yourself. And so it's nice probably for you guys to, when you're starting your own thing, to create an environment where that's probably not allowed.
Well, yeah. And also, a lot of creative people have the best strategies and also really interesting business changing kind of business models. And that's the kind of people that we want to work with, like kind of entrepreneurial-minded people.
Yeah.
So what's your problem? And then let me solve your problem using all the tools that we have.
Especially as you kind of move away from, the given media to that, like TV or a radio or print being the only ways to solve, our clients' business problems. It's really silly to leave anybody out of any of that process.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. And so how did you guys come to the conclusion? Because you were at Refinery.
Lisa, I was.
You were at Refinery 29. Mm-hmm. And you were there for a little while, and then you're like, I got to get back in this ad game.
That's so funny. Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
That was it. She was like, I got to get in.
I miss it so much. No, actually, it's interesting though because I really love solving brand problems. I really do. And one of the challenges with being in a brand is that you're solving their brand challenges. And yeah, there are other advertisers that work with you, but you're not the agency for them. You're not the one cracking their nut necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really miss that. And I was trying to find a way to build an even richer kind of creative services model for a Refinery. And I reached out to Jamie right away. I've been following this woman for so many years.
You guys had never worked together.
We had never worked together. And we were kind of email friends, I guess I would say. She was in San Francisco and I was in New York and I always wanted to work with her. And after she had created that really famous Intel work, it was so directional for me in the same way that kind of BMW Films was for the industry. I really felt that with her work. So I'm like, I have to know this person. So she's been on my kind of like secret, wish list of people I could work with for a really long time. So when I had an opportunity to potentially develop this new structure for Refinery, I'm like, she's the first person I want to.
That's great.
I want to call.
I gotta say, I had met with her and again we had kind of emailed back and forth and it's funny you have certain people when I think also being a woman in the industry you have certain people that people tell you about again and again that oh you really should meet this person like you would find them like you should spend time and Lisa was we had come up several times like oh this she's a dynamo like you should meet her like you guys would get along and it was kind of an instant thing like we met and talked about a lot of things and creativity and the kinds of work to that we want to make and things that made us excited And it was like, you know, I don't, it was like incredible. Like it just felt very natural right away.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that we would do something together. I kind of texted my husband on the way home. I'm like, I just met this woman. She's going to be like my BFF forever. Like I just can't wait to tell you all about her.
Oh.
And I can say after being in this, you know, starting this company, you know, two years and change after, it's like, it couldn't be more true. It really is like, you know, it is really like an insanely close friendship, and happen to be also people that respect each other's ideas and their thoughts, I'm just feel very fortunate.
That's really nice.
This is so sweet. I got to say something nasty about her. She's a total dick.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's too nice. We're being too nice.
Yeah, we'll get to the real stuff. Like, what's your least favorite personality trait? But yeah, I worked with Lisa for a year and a half, and yeah,
you know,
one of my favorites.
Oh my God.
Just,
so
I mean,
we
can
had
see
so
things
fun.
So far in advance, like, yeah. You know, and I think one of the things that we are so blessed to have a partnership like this is, you know, we bounce everything off of one another, you know, and just completely trust in one another. So
I have to say that I have such an appreciation for entrepreneurs in a way that I don't think I really understood before doing this.
Oh yeah. You don't really know.
You don't know. Yeah. You know, that to the bone feeling. You know what I mean? You just don't really appreciate it. And then there are people who do this alone as the sole founder.
Yeah.
And it just makes me think, I don't know how who do they talk to?
Well,
you know what
even
I mean?
Like having a business partner still gets pretty lonely.
Yeah.
Because like you'll go, all right, how do we handle this? And sometimes you're just like, I don't know. And then you're like, all right, well, who do we talk to? And you're like, I don't know. And so then like it gets lonely even in your duo.
Yeah.
And exactly. So I can't imagine if you're by yourself just in a room just going
crazy. Oh my God,
you
drive your loved ones nuts, I'm sure.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
It's like so, Howard Hughes stuff. I think you just start to like bottle your pee. And you're like, that's it.
And just
that's
dig
it.
Tunnels and it's, bottle your pee. Yeah. Well, solo
hashtag
entrepreneurs
goals.
Out there. Yeah. Good luck with that and bottling your pee. Well, so how did you guys come to the decision then to start Joan and do your own thing?
I think that one of the things that we really felt at the time, and I think still feel, is that it's not an either or. Publishing is not necessarily the thing that lights both of us up without
right.
great brand work mm-hmm. alongside of it. And likewise, you know, a classic agency structure with kind of classic approach to brand building is also not that interesting anymore. And so it's the combination of those two things. And if you really think of it, if somebody from Wyden and somebody from Refinery 29 started an agency together, it just gives you an idea of a new way of approaching a modern brand building, solution. That's a cheesy word, but I couldn't
think
of. But anyway, so I think that was so interesting that it felt compelling enough to just go and do it.
And just go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think also it was, you know, think about 2 years ago and, you know, obviously still today, our industry is just kind of, it's rapidly changing, but the faults are, especially 2 years ago, were glaringly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were saying, you know what, there's a lot of great work to be done on behalf of brands, a lot of great thinking to be done on behalf of brands. And we still believed in creativity for business.
Yeah.
But maybe some of the things that our industry were putting into practice more regularly were not good things, and we could do something about it for at least ourselves and people that worked with us.
Yeah, and it seems like a thing, like they were doing these things because it was historical, and they felt the need to keep doing this and then hold on to like whatever there is. And
it's
like, you know, and I think for me, just being on the outside now and seeing what's going on, I feel like the whole model needs to be torn to the ground. Because it's absurd and it's inefficient, and in places that were supposed to be built on creativity are not creative places anymore.
Yeah,
it's so true.
And you can't bring great talent in if you're working on that big shitty client that treats everybody awful, and you feel like you have to do your time on it. Like creatives don't have to put up with that
Mm-mm.
anymore. You know, like there's plenty of opportunity now, and especially culturally, it seems like creativity is being prioritized.
Yeah.
And creative problem solving is being prioritized. So it makes sense that you guys see that gap and then be able to come in and swoop in.
Yes. It's amazing how much decoding we have to do even when new people start who have the desire to do things differently because it's so deep in.
Right.
You know,
so
like.
So it's like people like Scientologists getting
a little
out
bit.
Of that.
Yeah. It's like a little bit of PTSD. Like, yeah. Wait, but how many hours are we allowed to spend on this?
Yeah.
Like, no, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be okay.
Or, yeah.
You know, we.
What deliverables do we have
that's
to
it.
Fill?
Like, don't.
You know, or.
Whatever's right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
And even sometimes, you know, we approach every single thing like, does this really matter? Or are we just doing it because it's historical, to your point? Mm-hmm. So we've taken some fundamental pillars out of work. Like, when we first started, we didn't have account people. We had strategists
which is
who
funny,
managed
that. That was part of your background.
Yeah, but it's not to say account people aren't amazing. It's more to say that the right kind of account people are super strategic people.
Yeah,
and so if you can, you know, why should they not have a strategic title? Because then people will expect that they deliver a strategy too.
Right.
But that actually ended up being kind of not a disaster of epic proportions, but a small disaster in that clients still wanted to know who was managing their business, and they got very confused by the title and felt like we didn't have, you know. So
even if the same job was being done,
I mean,
same
is that like, but who
done.
Could I point to?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is that person.
Absolutely. And then here's another example. We started without creative briefs. And because we felt like it was too confining, we wanted to work off business problems. We wanted to bring a variety of solutions, mm-hmm. not just one that was decided before anybody even got started in the work.
Yeah.
And in some cases, that really worked. And in other cases, we spun around because the client never really agreed to anything at the upfront.
Right.
You at least need to put the business problem very well stated on a brief.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and some of the key facts.
Yeah.
And so, well, we were not even establishing the key facts at first. It was just
exactly.
Like.
So I think what's interesting about it is some of the things we found actually really still matter.
Yeah.
So it's not
you're
all
like, let's
that.
Blow up the whole model.
Yeah. Okay. He's like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. There's a reason for that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, we didn't even get into the story behind the name.
Oh. Well.
Which is a great one.
So when we were, you know, when we were at lunch, this one lunch, drinking a lot and talking about this, you know, that one of the fun things that you can pick is, what are you going to name the company? It's like,
it's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure, but it's also the fun part. It's like,
yeah. It's
like when you remodel a house, picking the finishes is the fun part, but you got to also fucking figure out the plumbing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But we were like, okay, let's do this. And there was, you know, well, the obvious trope is to name it after our last names, you know, mm-hmm. Clooney Robinson, Robinson Clooney, something like that, mm-hmm. which Lisa later pointed out, by the way, that we would be, those were both married and have taken our husband's names. So they actually would have been named after, they wouldn't even.
Those dicks are not getting this company.
No way. We could have been, been Keppel and Palmiotti, by the way, which sounds like a much more fun place to be.
Sounds a little bit like naughty things happen at that company. You know what I mean?
Keppel and Palmiotti, what happens there? Oh my God, it's like Lucille Ball and, you know.
Yeah.
But, So we basically were like, it like literally was like 5 seconds and we're like, no, that's just wrong. Cause we wanted it to be about something that was bigger than us. And we also wanted to, you know, when you create an agency, you're creating a brand, right? And, we as creative people should put some thought into what our brand is. And we often don't, you know, it's the shoemaker's children have no shoes, you know? And so, it was kind of a weird thing where we went home in the middle of the night. I kind of was like up excited about it. And it kind of popped in and I woke up really early and I made a PowerPoint deck with like all the different possible Jones. And I was like so excited. I'm like, Lisa, I have something, but I'm not sure. Like, let's talk. I was like breathless. And she's like, okay. And I'm like, I'm so proud. It was like 16 pages of a PowerPoint deck. It was a keynote, but it was like, whatever.
Yeah.
And I got to page 2 and she's like, stop. That's it. We don't even go any further. I got it. That's it. And we never considered another one.
That's great.
Yeah.
It is one of those nice things when you know you got it, you're like, no, okay, let's move on. Next thing.
It's a visceral thing, you know? And I think it's one of the most interesting questions that we get is really people are really fascinated with the name. I think it evokes a lot.
Yeah.
And also in our jobs email, you know, when people email us for jobs, 90% of the people have a Joan in their lives that they reference. Like, oh, my grandma was named Joan. Even my Camaro, I had named my Camaro Joan.
Oh, that's
you're
great.
Hired. Camaro named Joan.
Camaro
Joan.
But there is this kind of spirit of, you know, kind of a, not an angry person, but like a take no shit kind of, you know.
And you know, as we started to look at all the different Joans, it was like, holy crap. So there's, you know, Joan Rivers, and she was a pioneer. And Joan Jett, and she was a pioneer. And Joan of Arc, and she was a pioneer.
Uh-huh.
You know, and Joan Armatrading, and like all these amazing Joans. Joan Chen. And
Joan Moreau.
Yeah, who is the godfather of I think, surrealism. So yeah. It's like, so you just started thinking about all these people who are trailblazers, and they're, you know.
That's such a great insight. It, like when I heard the name, I was like, fuck, that's awesome.
I love
and
it.
And it got me excited, you know.
Oh, that's great.
But I wonder, you know, how are you guys sick of the question about being two women who started an ad agency yet?
We don't get it that much anymore.
We don't.
Because it seemed like such a, when it came out, like, everybody's like, oh, wow. Wow, that's a big deal. And it's like, it shouldn't be a big deal.
It was
in
New York Magazine.
Really?
The Cut did a story, what an ad agency started by women. That was a headline. It was like, wow.
And it was The Cut from 1965.
We love The Cut, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you for writing that story.
if anybody's listening from The Cut, yes, we also would like more publicity. Thank you. you know, it's funny. It was a big thing when we first started. It was a lot of the, you know, because we actually are thinking about this in such a big way that we're like, oh, yeah, we're two people who, you know, who are starting it. And we do understand that there's a responsibility that we have, you know, as two women who are starting something, and also an opportunity, because for the most part, work that's made for women has traditionally been shitty creative work.
Yeah.
So it's actually a great opportunity for us as well to create awesome stuff that is actually as thoughtful as the stuff we would make for a 22-year-old man, right? So that's awesome.
Yeah.
But everybody wanted to really write about that when we first started. I think that now people are really interested in our model. They're really interested in our work. They're interested in.
I think partly because our clients are mostly mixed gender, just kind of everyone.
Yeah, like regular old.
And our clients. Staff is everyone. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I thought that was an interesting thing, because I think coming out of the gates, we didn't really know how it was going to go, right? So you're like, oh, are they only going to hire women? And then you hired male CDs, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I it seems like typically, you're saying work for women or any non-male targeted audience is very cliche and very pedestrian.
It is.
And it's crazy that that's still an issue, but to be able to bring broader thinking to, you know, I was married for many years to a female creative in the ad industry, and like she would be asked to work on the dumbest shit.
Oh my God. And it's hard. I mean, running a couple departments, it's hard to get anybody to work on it too, because it's like, they know it's just going to be crap.
Yeah.
They know. And so our goal is to try to, you know, little by little change that. But yeah, it's hard.
But it's interesting still, you know, how teams get assigned to work in a lot of companies, because there are female CEOs at what are traditionally male brands. Like, look at NASCAR, for example. It's run by a female CMO, I think, still. But and likewise, there are like female brands like MaxiPad companies that are being run by men, but yet creatively it still feels like women work on women's things, men work on men's things. Time to shake that up.
Well, you know, I never understood it too, because I think you know, if you typecast for your assignments, sometimes you're just going to get the same thing back. And the thing is, because people are smart and they know, oh, you're asking me to do this thing because I'm, you know, a 24-year-old dude, and you want me to do 24-year-old dude work. Yeah. So I'm going to give you the same thing that I've seen other 24-year-old dudes do. I find it's really interesting sometimes to put people who are very different on briefs, because they aren't being typecast, and they know subconsciously that they're being asked for it because this isn't the expected casting for the brief.
Yeah.
So mixing it up is fun.
Well, but and then going into the, you know, it's such a buzzword, diversity. But it is also really important to have representation and have people in the room that, you know, I think we can go really polar with like men and women, but I think even other points of view too that are appropriate for the work, or at least
it's
having
true. And that is true.
And it seems like a really kind of crucial point right now. There's a lot of people talking about diversity, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of people doing much about it. Mm-hmm. But it seems like you guys are starting to do something about it. You got a foundation that you're working on?
We do. We took this crazy step to register as a 501c3, which is an IRS designation, which has a lot of reporting standards and accounting standards and stuff like that to keep your nonprofit status. It took us a year. And that foundation is really about helping people who haven't seen themselves represented get invited to this this career. And there's a lot of support actually in the industry once you're in. There's like Ad Color Network, and you know, the One Club has one. Like there's a lot once you're in. Still probably not enough, but when it comes to helping kids dream about their future and dream about their careers and see this as an option, there really isn't that much. So we start in seventh grade.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Talking to kids who don't see themselves. And I think that it's also the parents that need to know that this is a really good job to have.
Yeah.
You know?
So. Well, I talk about that a lot in here because the creative industry and those jobs are not what's encouraged by parents. They're like, oh, they've tried to like beat the creativity out of you and go get a real job. And it's like, but those jobs are not going to be the jobs of the future, you know? And I think that's one of the things, like, you're not going to be able to replace what we do, you know, hopefully.
Yeah. At least it'll be the last thing
to
replace.
Thing, right? Yeah, yeah.
I think this myth of the starving artist is dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it just basically makes you feel like if you pick creativity as a career, there's no financial benefit to that. Yeah.
I almost want to go and take like creatives from Working Out Working. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
Just do talks at schools and have them tell the kids how much money they made last year.
Well, that's,
I mean, blow their minds.
Yeah. I do illustrations and I made $200,000.
Yeah.
Year.
Yeah.
And kids go, holy shit, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could do that.
And the other thing is, it's like, you know, people see creativity and they don't think that that actually has anything responsible behind it or like respectable behind sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
It's like this job requires an enormous amount of business sense. Mm. Like even the best creatives have to have a good sense of what's happening to their client's business. And it's actually a very adult job.
Yeah.
You know, we do throw things across the office sometimes, but it's, you know, but it's an adult job. It's a grown up thing.
Yeah.
It's real, Mom. I swear.
you've been around for 2.5 years now. How big is the company now? How many people you got there? How many Joners?
I think we're at 32.
Yeah, something
32. Wow. I think we've just, we've given two more offers last week. Very exciting.
Congratulations.
We have our first, like, important space.
Ooh, big
which
space.
Is really big. So we started the company out of Noia House.
Uh-huh.
So we were renting desks by the desk, and we were smuggling people in.
By the desk.
I mean, the whole situation of we won General Mills while we were in there, so we had to scale up really fast to handle 5 General Mills brands, right?
Wow.
And we had an office that was eight people.
And we had, like, how many in there?
16.
Yeah. I mean, it was so smelly. You have no idea. It was like, it was really...
If you went to the bathroom, you lost your seat. And
that was it.
And that was even Lisa and I were like, we can't even get a seat in here. All right, I guess that's okay.
I know. So it was next level.
How quickly did you win that business?
So we opened, like, officially in May, and then I think we won in November.
Yeah, November, I think.
But we had gotten Progresso right before that, and we had done, 8 television spots or something like that.
John
for Progresso.
Lithgow doing the
Jamie
voiceover.
And me and a couple of freelancers.
It was back in the day. That was like, it was Clooney and me just like writing stuff and going, you know, oh, the team has been working very hard on this.
I know.
And they're like, okay.
Believe the facade.
We're like, oh God, we need a lockup for something. And we'd look at each other like,
what are we going to do? God. We're like, working.
Exactly, totally.
It was one of our first things.
Oh, look, James Clooney's available.
Yeah.
That would be actually more.
He's doing nothing. Come on, honey. You know how to art direct some stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's amazing. But then you make it happen. You go and
you do it.
And then you're like, okay, now this is real.
Now this is real. Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
And we, you know, we had a bunch of calls. It was funny because Lisa and I, we announced and we were in the middle of actually, we announced in May, at the end of May, and we were traveling. We were pitching stuff for Progresso, and we were traveling down to Austin to do another meeting. And it was the day we announced, and we were like, oh, we'll just, let's just, out of curiosity, see if anything has come into our new business at Joan email. Like, let's just see.
Uh-huh.
And we did, and we opened the thing, and there were like 20 different emails, and they were from like, big companies, like the best ones. We're very interested. We'd like to talk to you. And we were like, sitting on an Airbnb bed with like with
our
pajamas on.
And like in the same bed. Like,
we're like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
And it was such validation immediately. Okay, this offering, this idea for a company and the way we would love to structure it and the kind of work we want to do is, and you know, maybe at that point two women, is something that is resonant. And it was awesome. It was awesome.
And
fun.
And you had a site up then with your...
Our site went up in 2 days, I think.
Yeah. And it's still the same site.
Right.
Maybe for the time...
No work on it.
No work on it.
I was trying to find your work and I'm like combing the internet.
You have to piece it together.
Well, we're doing a new site now, but oh my God. I think that the the last 2.5 years has been like... so full on that some of those basic things like putting your work on your site just have not been done.
I think everyone can relate to that.
You know?
Yeah. You're too busy doing it and you're like, oh shit, my portfolio is 5 years out of date.
Oh crap.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's exciting. And I saw, according to Google, that you guys signed a lease on new office space.
Yes. So we are just down here on Wall Street. And
You haven't moved yet, though, right?
Well, we have moved, but not to the new space. It's the classic construction thing. They were like, "Oh, you're going to be done in we're going to be done with construction in July," and so we're like, "Great, we'll just get our sublet to go till July, and we'll just piece together a few weeks here and there from other things." And July came around, and they're like, "Oh, actually, it's December." So, but that's okay because we're going to take our time and make it amazing. And we are picking tile and we are picking finishes,
which
and
is really good,
so exciting.
But we're in the building,
yes.
So we're just on a different floor, and they're renovating above us,
actually directly above us, and they start like at 6, and so it's then you big
can,
banging, and you're
you
like,
can't be annoyed by
no.
the sound.
Yeah, you're like, oh, that's
our sound.
That's the sound of work being done.
You're
on
like,
our
actually. Bang more, faster. Let's go.
That's so nice. That's exciting.
It's good. Yeah,
it's cool.
Now, have there been any, I know you said about the traditional agency structure and kind of throwing some things by the wayside. Mm-hmm. Is there any other things that surprised you with starting a business?
Oh my God.
Yeah, like you were saying about your newfound respect for entrepreneurs. Like what are some things that really stood out?
I think talent. I think that, you know, one of the things that you think about when you think about starting a company is revenue and quality of your work. And that's like really that what you focus on. We need to make excellent work. We need to land A-plus clients. And the kind of yada, yada, yada between those things is who is doing this. Uh-huh. And it's like weirdly not the thing that I have to say. I didn't give that enough credit at the beginning. How absolutely critical it is to find the right people and build your culture.
Mm-hmm. And it's also difficult when you are lucky enough to have a lot of success at front, mm-hmm. because the time that it takes to find great talent is substantial. Yeah. And so, but I have a presentation like 2 days from now. So, or tonight, so I have to actually spend the next 2 days making that work with the people that we have. And so we know we need to hire more people, but we don't have time to look for those people. So it gets to be this kind of thing. You get caught up. So, but I think we are incredibly lucky that our team is, I think they've come for a lot of things. I think they've come for the promise of great work. I think they've come for, you know, the vibe, but I also think they come for the mission too, and they really believe in this kind of thing.
Yeah,
and we love them.
And they probably come for you guys.
Nah. Well, maybe me, not so much Jamie. just kidding.
I'm taking away the songs. Yeah, I mean it's really fun, and when you look around, and you see the team that is there and that is working so hard and is really using all of their creative energy, and you just become incredibly grateful for it.
You do. Like there are times when you're just sitting there looking around going, God, I could cry right now. Like, look at these people. I love them all so much.
Yeah, I know that.
You know?
I had that moment where we had the entire team. There's like 13 of us in LA for, you know, a whole team summit, which was really exciting. And we were sitting around Tito's Tacos, I think it was, in LA.
I love it.
And everyone's just eating chips and tacos and all that. And I was sitting at the head of the table and just looking around at all the conversations. And it felt like a Norman Rockwell moment.
Yeah.
And I realized, and I said this to Adam, and I was like, this is how my mom must feel when all of her kids are home for Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's like almost being nostalgic for the present.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, wow, this is pretty cool. And it's probably not going to be like this again. And this is pretty amazing.
It is amazing.
It's nice to have those moments because I think it's easy to get caught up in all of it. And it's nice to have those moments to go like, oh, shit, pretty fortunate.
Pretty fortunate. Yeah, absolutely.
We try, Lisa and I try to every once in a while look at one another and go like, We're really lucky in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I'm Italian and I'm so superstitious. I'm going to knock on wood right now. This is, I think, particle laminate. I'm not sure if that counts as wood. But like, you know, I think we try to remind ourselves that the kind of clients we have and our, you know, our people and just, I don't know. And the fact that we, you know, woke up today, as lame as that sounds, is, you know, you're lucky, man. You're lucky. Yeah.
And is there one quality that you look for when you're hiring people? Like something that stands out that you're like, they have to have this.
I personally look for playfulness and audacity. Like, I just want people that are, like, a little bit of that want to make something and make stuff and be in a world that they're, like, pushing some buttons, a little twinkle in the eye. Like, I like that. Like, work, for sure. Like, if you look at their work, I want to look and be super surprised and maybe a little uncomfortable by one or two pieces in their book where I'm like, wow, that's ballsy.
Uh-huh.
I like it.
Yeah.
You know?
I love mischief. I definitely love mischief. That's like one of my favorite things. I think that I also look for people who probably could have started one of these new DTC kind of companies. Like, I think about people who can see what's happening in the world and culture and who don't live in advertising. Like, they think about things like, how would I bring the lesson of Allbirds to, you know, this big interesting client? Like, people who can mash up interesting things that are happening. Because the minute you just start hiring people who are, like, you know, drunk on the agency process, you totally lose sight of what is actually happening in the world. And it's just, to me, it's really important that the people who work for us from a business standpoint or from a strategy standpoint are more interested in the way commerce is changing. Yeah. And,
well, I think it's almost drunk in any process.
You're right.
If you're so convicted, you have so much conviction or certainty about something being done that way, it's like you need that curiosity.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was reading. It was something about how there was an operating room with people doing transplants, and they were doing organ transplants, and they were having this failure rate where it wasn't as efficient as it should be. And they end up looking to Formula One pit crews, and they end up meeting with them and learning about their process. And so the Formula One pit crew was like, oh, yeah, well, this is how your setup should be more efficient, and this thing should be over here, and this. And then they took that, and then they made the transplant operating room, like, learning from that experience. And it's always stuck with me about, like, how do we take something that works in another industry and apply the efficiencies or the thinking behind that to whatever we're doing?
100%.
Yeah.
So interesting.
It gets exciting. And just to be open to those experiences. Yeah.
Well, and also, so then what was great about the story you just told is, like, the doctors could have been like, well, what does Formula One guys have to teach us? Yeah. So being, like, letting your guard down and saying, let me go ask somebody something is really important. And we try to do that, too. We try to ask people things.
And not having ego is kind of a big part of that.
Yeah.
So who's got the bigger ego out of the two of you?
Boy.
I don't know. I think it's, I don't know. Is it you? Is it you?
I might be me.
I think it's you.
It might be me.
But I don't know. I think it could be. I don't know. But you're also incredibly selfless.
Well, I think you have to have some kind of ego. Honestly, if I didn't have an ego, I don't think I'd start this business. I'd just be like really happy to be a follower.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like number two.
You need some audacity.
Yeah. I think so. I think you got. And I was born like the kind of person who always thought like the people in charge were a problem. Like, I don't know. It's just the way I came out of the womb.
Oh, God.
I hated my parents from the beginning.
She hates
authority. I mean, I do. I really, really do.
Like, she's giving fingers to cops when we're on travel. She's like behind the back. No, she's not. Really
I can't help it, you know? And it's so funny because it is like humble pie being a parent and also now being a CEO, because those are the authorities that I've had in my life. And now I'm now I'm like, hey, how about a little empathy here? You know what I mean?
I know.
Well, how has your perspective changed since you've gone into those roles now?
I mean, I think that, you know, like I said, I have a lot of softness about myself for people who've gone out and tried something and did something. Like, it's to a point where, like, you could get kind of teary about it because it's just so deep to go and start something. Also the nuances of things that were probably going on that I didn't have any idea about, you know, and not being sensitive to the fact that people have their own lives that are personal and some people are fighting battles that you don't even know about. But then also the dynamics of the company are such that you see what's right in front of you, but they have to see like all of the things.
Uh-huh.
And just thinking about things like nobody in our office thinks about cash flow. But I think about cash flow.
Yeah.
And so when I'm hustling people up or around, they might just think I'm a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about, you know, those kinds of things. So it's just like now being more sensitive to those things that were kind of hidden from me as a just an employee has made me much more, I think, empathic.
Yeah, I was listening to a book the other day. I think it was Radical Candor. And she was saying how most bosses and people who run companies just think they're failing people and failing all of the time. And it's so easy to feel like that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, because you get, you basically get punched in the face all the time by everything. Like, I really think it's like, you know, because like you might start to, you have a great meeting and you're like, you are going to sell an amazing piece. But then to Lisa's point, like you come around the corner and someone's like, oh, we have to think about, you know, if, you know, how the cash flow is going to work or for, you know, there's just, you have to keep going. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I think that one of the things that was very surprising for me was how there is no, in this business, in this job, there is no recovery time. Right. So you basically have to solve something and then you turn the corner, you know, or literally turn your head and then you have to solve something else. Or you're dealing, you get a piece of news that you didn't, you know, want to hear. You have to compartmentalize that and put that somewhere else so that you can now go give feedback on the work.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I think the things that probably would have taken me a lot longer to recover from, the bits of news and things like that in the past. Now it's like, okay, put that aside. We're moving on. We're doing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we first started this company, we had a very, very high profile client reached out for us to do a piece that we actually made and produced and would have been something that would have really been very significant for Joan.
Yeah.
And
it might be our best piece ever.
I think it might be our best piece ever.
Yeah.
And nobody saw it
because it was, a thing that was deemed too hot, for the client at the time. And,
political.
And it was a political thing. And it's there and we have it and it's amazing. And every once in a while we'll show it to somebody who's, you know, new hire or whatever. And you'll see them their hair stands up on their arms and you're like, fuck. Yeah. But, you know, I think in the olden days that probably would have taken me, you know, personally, 2 months to recover from.
Yeah.
But you don't got time for that shit. You got to get up. Come on. We got to move on. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, and I think at the same time, it's kind of nice to know that you could do it. Like we've got that. We've got that. We're capable of that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the baseline.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, cool.
That's true.
Now we can, now we know we can do it. Let's beat it.
Yeah.
But you almost need to be able to push yourself to get to a point where you're like, oh yeah, we can do that and we can do better, which I think is exciting.
That is.
And then I've been really excited lately about Damn Joan.
Woohoo!
Do you want to explain what Damn Joan is? I heard about it through Instagram and your Instagram, and then also I started seeing people with really dope necklaces.
Oh yeah, I don't have mine on actually. I need to get mine dipped in gold. It's like turning silver. I'm just like looking a little.
So you were selling necklaces where people could get their name with Damn in front of it.
Like Damn Lisa, Damn Jamie.
Yeah. Hit us up if you guys want one.
Yeah.
So Damn Joan is a consumer brand. So one of the things that was sort of in the foundational principles of our company is that we want more ways to monetize than just through client businesses, and we need to build our own intellectual property and our own consumer brand. So
that's the future.
Damn Joan is a consumer brand. It has started with like a publishing bent. So it publishes on the site, on Instagram. There's a newsletter. And it's a kind of a provocative culture mag.
Yeah.
And there's so many more things to come for Damn Joan. It's going to change form slightly.
It's going to morph. It's going to transform into something. But we actually have, we have a few things that we're planning on doing with that. And we're really excited because we've got this great foundation of a belief system and a tone. Mm-hmm. And we can do a lot of fun shit off of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily need to articulate itself in just a magazine or
Instagram. Exactly.
It could be a lot of things. But it's nice to be able to also have an opportunity to bring other voices in
Yes.
And just get things out there.
That's it. And also it's important to remember to live in the culture and live in the world, like listen to good music and know all the cool artists that are happening and see who responds to your posts and talk to them back and forth. It kind of gets you out of that. Like, I'm in the boardroom all the time talking about these hypothetical consumers. You know what I mean? It's like,
and try new formats in a lower risk environment. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, you just throwing shit out there. Yeah. Oh, wow. Now we know how to make that. Okay, great. And that's awesome. And like, and giving, you know, our entire company another playground to play on, you know, that doesn't exist just to clients.
And is it primarily the content being created by your
employees?
Your employees.
Yes. Yeah.
That's nice to have another outlet to be able to put stuff out there.
It is. Cool.
And it's great. And it's great for recruiting too, because you're just like, hey, we're doing this thing. And if you have an idea that doesn't necessarily fit for a client, but you want to make it, we'll do it.
And then you could have some legs and see where that goes. And
that's it.
And I think that's the future of this industry as a whole is, you know, creating your own intellectual property because I think that was a big reason why I got out of advertising.
Yeah.
Because I got tired. I think, you know, for me, once I learned how to make stuff and had a network of people that I could rely on and be inspired by and all that, I didn't feel the need to come up with ideas for brands and holding companies anymore. Mm-hmm. I wanted to come up with ideas for myself. Okay. And it seems like it's something that you're inspired by is the ability to put things out there and being like less processed, less precious, and let's put it out there and see where it goes. And I think that's kind of the tenet of modern culture is like you can put it out there, come up with the idea today, put it out there in a couple of hours and see how people respond to it.
Totally. I mean, I do think that it's amazing how funny regular people are. Like, you know, you can watch, you know, your Twitter feed or look at Instagram, and there are some of the best things that you see are just some person who thought of something funny and put it up there, right? And so how can we bring that spontaneity and just commentary into our lives so we think more like that? We unclog our system and we just kind of like let the creativity flow.
Yeah.
That's why you guys have theme songs for everything?
We do. Thong, 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 thong.
By the way, I have notes in my phone of my karaoke drunk feedback to myself.
Okay.
Oh,
and it says next to thong song, don't do.
Oh.
Because I did it, and there's just a lot of oohs and ahs that I don't know how they go. I know the chorus, but after that, it's just off the rails.
I think after you've had a couple beers, that's probably a really helpful list. You're just like, oh, no, that's that was it.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a karaoke song that you go to?
I love anything like Holding Out for a Hero or Love is a Battlefield. Like, I love the screamy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get it out.
Yeah. I like Jolene. That's a good one.
Solid Jolene.
Yeah.
I mean, we do tend to do some Dolly Parton.
Yeah. Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
That's totally not related to anything, but I always like hearing people's karaoke songs. I think it's a good insight in your personality. All right. So at the end of most of my interviews, I ask these maybe a little bit harder questions.
Oh, geez.
Oh, shit.
Sorry. I think you'll be fine. Do you feel like you have something to prove?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Why?
Constantly. I mean, I would just say as Joan, yes, but even just individually, it's just like you just come up and everybody deals with like this kind of ego on one side and wild insecurity on another. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably just a part of being a creative. And also the idea of, you know, you enjoy the success for a second and then you're like, okay, but what have I done? Let's go more, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, 100%.
I think I'm afraid of peaking.
It's funny. Like, my next question is, are you afraid you've peaked?
Yeah, I'm afraid of peaking. My mom used to say to me, you know, you're not fulfilling your potential. Like every, you know, like my report card would come home. You know, you're very smart. You're not fulfilling your potential. and I think about that all the time. Like, what is my potential? And do I have self-limiting behaviors and things that like are holding me back from all of this future that I could have? And I think about that. I think about like, how far could I go?
Mm-hmm. You have to try to use that that fear of, in a good way. You have to try to harness that and not let it get the best of you. But when you do have it, then it's like what makes you stay up late and push and just go, oh God, it's not good enough. Like we have to keep pushing. Like we got to go more.
Yeah.
Well, what are those self-limiting behaviors?
I think
for
it's
me,
like,
it's procrastination.
Oh, yeah, procrastination's a good one. I think for me, it's more like a mental spiral of, like, you know, bad stuff, like you're not good enough, or, you know, you didn't go to Harvard or something. You know what I mean?
Who,
like,
are you?
Yeah, kind of like,
who do you think you
who
are?
Do you think you are? And I think, and actually, I used to do this presentation for students that was, I used to put this thing up that was like, how do I get out of my frame of mind and think about how somebody I really respect would have handled the same problem? Mm. And so I had this mental thought of what would Steve Jobs do? And it would be like, that
he'd
would
be an asshole.
Right? Yeah. He would. But then at some point I realized, you know, he was a guy.
Yeah.
Like, we're all just people. Mm-hmm. So, like, what would I do? And maybe that's okay just to think about, like, what would I do? Anyway.
No, that's right. That's the right answer.
Yeah.
You win a prize.
Oh, hey.
What would I do?
Hey.
Are you motivated by specific goals?
I mean, yeah, I think there's a couple goals. I mean, I think there are the goals to try to be the best. You know, anytime you've ever been in a room and you want to, you know, even as a coming up creative, you know, you want to be the best, and you count. I used to count how many things I got to stay up on the wall versus everybody else.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, and if it wasn't the most, then I would be pissed. And if it wasn't the lead, then I'd be pissed and you'd try harder. So,
so you're slightly competitive.
Yeah, a little bit. So I think that that's it. I think also right now, and this is going to sound incredibly mommy, but I'm motivated to by trying to do well for my kids, and to, like, make it so that the sacrifices that we're making right now are actually worth something, because they can see that this company has done good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah. The little fuckers.
I wasn't going to say anything about my children.
Well, you know.
I wasn't going to say anything about my children.
Because actually, you are, but it's true. Like, they are, like, super Joan fanatics.
They are.
They
How old
love
are your kids?
Joan. I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. And Lisa's very similar.
Very similar. Mine are turning 10.
And you have a boy and girl.
Boy, girl.
Two girls. Okay, yeah. And actually, my 10-year-old is obsessed, has been obsessed with Joan Jett for about 5 years. When we started this, we decided to name it Joan. She's got a picture of Joan Jett over her bed. Like, she's, like, super into Joan Jett. So it was, like,
incredible.
It was big for her.
That's amazing. How cool is a kid that is a massive Joan Jett fan, though?
I mean, seriously, it's like, cool, it's like,
right,
super
there. Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's been, do you feel like your ambition ever gets in the way of your happiness?
That's a tough one. I think because, in fact, even I was having this conversation with you yesterday about how...
It's a blur.
I know, it's such a freaking blur. I think that happiness is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I have, in a couple points in my career, left advertising to try different things. I went to try to be a yoga teacher. I got yoga certified. I was a fashion designer. I started an intellectual property company. And I think I was looking for happiness somewhere, you know? And what I've kind of come to realize is happiness is nowhere. It's in you. It's like, it's mm-hmm. just your state.
Yeah.
And so for me, I feel like I'm doing exactly what I should be doing. I'm doing it. I look forward to every single day when I wake up in the morning. I'm so grateful for my family. I think that is happiness. Do you know what I mean? I don't have any regrets. So I don't know. I focus on choosing it, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely, you know, a mindset. I heard, maybe it was a Tony Robbins thing, but it was like, it's never too late to have had a good childhood.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like one of those, just shifting your perspective on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe all the things that you thought were kind of maybe shitty or fucked up are the things that made you who you are and make
yeah.
you great and individual yeah. and unique. And so it's just changing how you're looking at stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, happiness being a choice is like, and then you're in control of that.
Yeah.
And you have the power to do that.
Yeah.
Which is a nice thing.
Yeah.
It's a good way to look at it.
You want me to answer this question
no,
too?
You don't have to.
No, I mean, I think, you know, I feel like my ambition and my happiness are actually pretty linked, and I don't think that either of them are destructive to one another. I think that my happiness actually feeds into the ambition,
mm-hmm.
and the happier I am, the actual better I will be at accomplishing the things I want to do.
Yeah,
and I think that at the same level, same way that my ambition is it makes me happy. So yeah. I actually see them being very, very linked. And I think the minute it starts to make you unhappy, then it's time to get out. Yeah. And also the other thing is also if you have an ambition and you don't go for it, that's when people are unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Because then you have regrets or wanting something else. Yeah, that's good. What's been the most challenging point of starting this company together?
Wow, that could be a whole hour on its own. Wow, the most challenging.
I mean, I think there is most challenging moment or most challenging thing.
It could be either, whatever works for you.
I actually think that one thing that is challenging is physical limitations, as stupid as that sounds. Like we just got in last night late from seeing a client. And, we got in and we're here doing this early in the morning. And it's like, God, I probably think we could be even sharper if we just had like 2 more hours of sleep as humans. Mm-hmm. So I think physical limitations are challenging, but I do think that our energy feeds off of each other. And this is another point where, and our company too, that we're lucky to have all of each other. Yeah, I think that's like, having to take pee breaks during the day.
Yeah. It's so funny.
I had someone tell me that they used to have to schedule bathroom breaks as meetings. Yeah. Because they were just seriously. Like, I had no time. Like,
by the way, that's maybe why Howard Hughes was peeing into fucking jars. Yeah, maybe that's why. Now it comes back to Howard Hughes and his jars of urine.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Lisa? Sorry.
I actually forgot.
We got totally distracted by you.
No. It's a much better topic, I'm sure.
What do you want to do that you haven't done yet?
In life?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think, Looney?
Well, I think that the IP side of our business is really the thing that feels like the big, exciting challenge, and not that the brand side of it is also a challenge. It's super exciting and fun. It's more of like what you've been trained to do. So that is it's less of an unknown. Mm-hmm. But the idea of what does it look like to actually build your own consumer brand is so fun, and all that energy kind of feeds both sides of the house. You know what I mean? It's like I learned this by trying it. I'm going to go apply that over here, and vice versa.
Well, okay. From a business perspective, I would 100% agree.
Yeah.
We are going to create some amazing things, I think, that are our own property.
Yeah.
And it's something that we're so chomping at the bit to do and make it happen. I think from a personal in life, I think eventually I'm going to write books of children's poetry. And like funny children's poetry.
That's cool.
Belle Silverstein style.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see that.
I actually have a title. It's Jemima Rima and her amazing harmonious melodious ear trumpet. But I don't have any.
Oh my God. Wow. That needs to happen.
Yeah. And Jemima Rima is me. And it's about a girl who finds an ear trumpet in a junk shop and can hear everything. Speak to her. I probably shouldn't have told this on. This is like, now I got to commit to it.
You put it out in the world. It's going to come out in all fine booksellers next summer.
Shit.
You have to do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know where you could find an illustrator.
Yeah.
Working.
Yes. Yep, I've heard of that place.
Yeah.
Let's see. Only a couple left. Which one? What's your biggest fear?
Sharks.
Yeah?
No, not really. I
have a bizarre, like, really terrifying fear of like physical things. Like I took the family, we all went to Costa Rica this year and we went ziplining. And my children, 6 and 9, were like, woohoo! And I was like, I don't know. I don't think I can do it. They're like, come on, mom, you're such a baby. Putting myself into physical situations just freaks me out. I did it. And actually, I had to use my yoga breathing just to do it. And I thought to myself, as I'm in the air, you have had children. Like, you have borne 2 children. You can make it on a zip line that a 9-year-old and 6-year-old just went before you.
Uh-huh.
But it's like really scary. Yeah. Yeah.
I used to be really afraid of flying, especially during turbulence. Now, I'm on a plane twice, 3 times a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you have to kind of get over that really quickly.
I love that you're on a plane 3 times a week.
I go somewhere and I never come back.
Never
two times, two times a week. All right,
be
fine.
Even numbers, I think.
Suck, Clooney. I swear to God, Clooney. But all right. So all right, two times a week on a plane. So you have to get over it. Like you hit turbulence and you kind of have to start saying, you know what? It's fine. So I have here's the funny thing. I have a song. It's Estelle's American Boy. And it's a great song. Yeah. And if I feel like I start to get nervous, I put it on repeat. And it's kind of my thing to say, you've put this on repeat. You have now 423 plays of the song, and you're still alive. So shut the fuck up and get over it.
I like when you have like just tricks like that to get yourself through stuff. That's great. That's a good one. Now I'm going to listen to that on the way out of here.
Yeah.
Who makes you jealous?
Oof. From a creative work perspective, I am wildly jealous of this work that Taika Waititi is doing. I think he's hilarious, and Thor Ragnarok was amazing. I think that the things that I'm most jealous of are happening in the entertainment space, because I think that there's a lot of rules being broken. Like if you look at Thor, you're like, how did a guy who basically only directed indie films, get this major budget picture, and then broke every single rule that any Marvel film should ever have. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. It was great. And I was so jealous of that creative leap and the passion it took to probably get that to happen exactly how he wanted it to.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of Emily Weiss, founder of Glossier. I just think it's so amazing what she's done, cultivating a fan base, starting a product line, being super duper focused on that, doing it with incredible aesthetics. I think she's amazing.
That's great. I know Lisa already answered this, but do you have any regrets?
I don't know. I have to say, like, I can tell you one thing. I stole something when I was in 7th grade, and it was a rock from my neighbor's yards. The McPartlands, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry.
A rock.
Well, it was they had a decorative geode in the landscaping, and it was nice. It was like an amethyst. It was pretty nice. And I asked for it, and they were like, the kids were like, no, you can't have it. This is our landscaping. and I was with this girl who was like, we're going to just steal it. And we stole it. And I have to say, like, I very deeply regret that because I felt so bad about it that I threw it away in the garbage can. I felt so bad.
Instead of returning it.
You know, that was probably the way that was, fuck.
You could have just undone it.
Where were you when I was in 7th grade? That sucks. Yeah, I could have undone that. I threw it away.
Hide the evidence.
Yeah.
So Lisa, really no regrets?
I mean.
It's okay not have any.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, I definitely have had bad behavior. You know, I sometimes think that I'm glad I've grown up from where I was, but I wasn't always like the nicest person, and I think part of that was from having an issue with myself. You know, so I regret that, and I don't regret my career or anything like that, yeah, but yeah. I regret if I've ever made people feel bad about themselves. Like that is really sucks.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I would have that one too.
Yeah.
What is success to you?
Oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy. I think one of the things that drives me is the foundation that we've started. And at the end of all of this time, to be able to look back and say, I made this industry a better place for people who were not really welcome at a certain point in time. And I can measure that. All of this education came through the foundation, and all of these people came into the industry because of that. I feel like the work that we do to drive the revenue is the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think helping people find and amplify their creative voice that maybe wouldn't be, and it's a bit linked to that too.
Yeah.
That maybe wouldn't have been, you know, heard before would be good. And also just, you know, pushing people or all of us pushing each other to kind of get to a place where we are even defying our own expectations would be, I would love that.
Yeah. It's nice though that your answers aren't about you. It's about the impact.
And so much money. So, and like a pool boy, and like that would just be major success. Really great car.
Three cars. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Are you happy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You seem it.
I first of all, I just feel like so lucky that I found Jamie. I just can't even. It's akin to finding the love of your life, you know. It really is. It's like I've got James Clooney and my children. I got Jamie. It's like so good, deep.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And I had to say, like, yeah, so much of the happiness is in what we're doing, but it is in the partnership we have, and just, you know, like she'll go away on vacation once, and I'm like, oh, something funny happened. I saw somebody on the street, and the first person I want to text is her and be like, oh, this funny thing just happened, and it's hard, like it's wonderful. It's like. It's not hard. It's amazing. It's hard to describe because you're just like, I don't know. You just find someone who you just feel like it's like that happiness is amplified because you're seeing her being happy.
It's getting me, guys.
Oh, man.
I like it. Last question. How are you feeling right now?
Excited.
Yeah.
Enthusiastic.
Yes. Like like Christmas morning. It feels like the good things are going to happen. Yeah. And it's nice
to. Yeah, for sure.
It's nice to feel like this is just the start, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It is.
It is. It's just a start.
Yeah. I'm really excited for you. I'm really impressed with everything you've done. I can't wait to see what else comes out of Damn Joan and Joan in general. But yeah, let's keep the conversation going. And thank you so much for being here. It's been great.
Thanks for having us.
Do you have any more last songs you want to include?
Oh my God.
Do you know I almost sang Regrets? I've had a few before. And no.
I just want to roll.
Oh, jeez. I was like, shot through the heart, and you're to blame.
You're so Jersey.
I'm so Jersey.
So Jersey. All right.
I've actually got ripped jeans on, too. Jersey style.
That's
come
amazing.
On.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
We did it. Those two are so ridiculous, but I love them. I'm definitely going to need to do karaoke for the follow-up episode with Lisa and Jamie. If you enjoyed this Overshare, please subscribe to ensure you get our future episodes and they're released every 2 weeks. I will try to make them all as fun and have as much singing as this one. Also rate and review us to help other people discover Overshare as well. Thanks to the team at Second Child for hosting us in their beautiful studio in Droga 5 in New York City. If you have any production needs, you should definitely hit them up. They've been really great to us. Also, thanks to our audio engineer, Jesse Peterson. Thanks to Working Not Working's multi-talented designer, Gabby D'Amato, for editing this episode. The Overshare theme song is Let It Grow by Caleb Groh. You can follow us on our brand new Overshare Instagram and Twitter channels at Overshare Talks to find more content and info about our live events. And we also have a private Facebook group at Overshare Talks as well. And if you'd like to learn more about Working Not Working and join as a creative or to hire amazing creatives, check us out at workingnotworking.com. That is all we've got for this episode. We'll see you next time.